The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, and I'm Molly Dishner. Welcome to our weekend coverage here on KDLG AM 670. The west side will wet some nets today. What better day than the longest day of the year for the first commercial opener? We'll talk to Fish and Game's Tim Sands on the push of fish up the Nooshigak and Wood Rivers that's prompted a first opener for set netters tonight, with thrifters on short notice Monday morning. Manager Paul Solomon gives an update from the east side, where a few fishermen have been making a little money this week. We have part two of an interview with University of Washington Professor Daniel Schindler up for the Fisheries Research Institute program this summer. Plus, come with me as I tag along on a drift boat's journey from Cook Inlet to Naknak, courtesy of the Williamsport Road. Before any and all of that, let's check out the Bay's latest catch and escapement numbers. Out at the Port Moeller Test Fishery, the replacement index Saturday was 34, down a little from Friday, but project manager Matt Namath says the catches the last couple of days have been pretty similar. Fish and Game also released the first set of genetics from the test fishery yesterday. Of the fish sampled so far, 46% were from the Egagic, 15% from the Wood River, 12% from the Kwijak, and 12% from the Nooshigak. Another 8% are of North Alaska Peninsula origin. Baywide, the catch hit nearly 178,000 sockeye yesterday. Most of the effort was in Igagik, where 18,000 fish were caught yesterday, bringing the season total to 163,548. The catches in Ugashik and Igushik are still confidential, and it's still quiet elsewhere as of yesterday. But plenty of sockeye were counted as escapement. The Igagik River count was 25,000, bringing the season total to 115,000. The Naknak count picked up, with 5,300 reds counted yesterday. The Kwijak count was 168 for a combined Naknak-Kwijak season total of about 7,000. No counts in Ugashik yet. On the west side, a whopping 4,300 Chinook were counted at the Nooshigak sonar yesterday, much higher than the days prior, bringing the season total to almost 20,000 kings. The Nooshigak sonar also counted 22,000 reds. Season total is now 55,500. At the Wood River Tower, 21,000 sockeye were counted yesterday for a total of nearly 48,000, with about 7,000 more added before 6 a.m. Yesterday's Igushik Tower count was 516 for a total of 984, with 852 more counted by 6 a.m. today. A quick look at some catch and escapement out beyond the bay. Area M fishermen landed 48,000 sockeye and 17,000 pinks yesterday, mostly around the Shumagins and South Unimak. The Area M sockeye catch now total 473,000 fish. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Contact me anytime at fish@kdlg.org. Back in a moment.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Crawley, fueling Alaska for more than 60 years with a full range of residential, commercial, aviation, and marine fuel products, and supporting local fisheries offshore with Bristol Bay Floater Fueling Services. More information at CrawleyFuels.com.
I'm Molly Dishner, happy to be hosting weekend coveries of the Fisheries Report on AM 670 KDLG. Yesterday on this program, Area Management Biologist Tim Sands told us there were a few scenarios that could play out to prompt an opener for the Nooshigak District. And it appears that one of those has come to pass. Sands is throwing the set netters open to effort beginning tonight at 5 and again tomorrow at 5:30 a.m., and the drifters are on short notice tomorrow morning at 9 for a possible opener at 10. Whatever happened, the wind change, temperature drop, or nature's way, kings and reds showed up big time yesterday and this morning. I spoke with Sands earlier for an update. Hey Tim, how's it going this morning?
It's going very well, Molly. How are you?
Good, thanks. There's an opener. What prompted that decision?
Well, We got our escapement counts this morning, and actually I got a call last night about 11:30 from our camp upriver saying that they were having a big push of fish going by. So this morning I came in, I got the counts from the sonar camp at Portage Creek, and had a really big push start last night. But even better, it was continuing through this morning, so that I think the total raw count of fish up there was in the 30,000 range yesterday. Between midnight and 6 a.m., another 29,000 fish went by. That equated to over 4,300 kings upriver yesterday, a really big boost on the king number, and continued good king escapement today. So we're back to projecting well above what we need for king escapement, and our sockeye escapement is picking up in the Wood River. So we want to get some net in the water to try and harvest some surplus fish.
Sounds good. And it looked like you're putting drifters on short notice. Do you have a sense of when they might be fishing?
Yeah, so we try and give the fleet 24-hour notice so that they're ready to go. And the earliest they could fish would be probably 10 o'clock tomorrow. We could do an announcement at 9 a.m. for a 10 a.m. opener. It'll be high tide, so people will be able to get out of the harbor if they need to. But by waiting till tomorrow morning, I get to fly a survey this afternoon. I get to get some information back from the set net opening that happens tonight and the one that happens tomorrow morning. And I'll get my counts tomorrow morning as well, so I can see exactly what the king situation is on the Nooshigak and how the sockeye escapement's going. So I get additional pieces of information. I use that to make a decision tomorrow morning at 9. I think there's a better than 50% chance that we'll fish tomorrow morning at 10, but I'm just keeping all my options open at this point.
Are you basically looking for continued king and sockeye numbers up the river?
Yeah, we want to keep getting kings and sockeye escapement up the Nooshigak and sockeye escapement up the Wood, and provide opportunity to harvest the fish that are surplus. So feel like we're in a good position now, and hope that continues. We just have to watch everything day by day, tide by tide.
Okay, and do you know how later in the week might play out, or is it all pretty contingent on what you see in the next couple of days?
It's all, you know, everything at this point is, like I said, tide by tide. Ideally, we'll be able to have kind of steady fishing from here on out, but we just got to take each day one day at a time.
That seems certainly fair. All right. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you, Molly.
Well, with news of Sands opener, the boatyard and grocery and supply stores were a flurry with activity, as if there hasn't been a week of great weather and nothing else to do but get ready to fish, right? I was down at the Dillingham Boat Harbor earlier and bumped into one longtime set netter who couldn't hide his excitement for the first chance to harvest some fish this season.
Kurt Olson, Ole, everybody calls me.
And are you a set netter?
Oh, yeah. Been up here. This is my 34th season. We live over at Nooshigak Point, my family, and we all set net over there. So have been up here, enjoyed it my whole life. It's been my life, you know. But a lot of people got to meet me. You know, I never knew a lot of people until they did the movie Red Gold, and I got an opportunity to tell how I felt about the fishery and that, and it was... A lot of people feel the same way I do, so set netters, drifters, we all feel the same thing. You know, we love to fish.
And it sounds like today you're going to get to fish.
We're going.
Are you excited?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that doesn't leave. I don't care how old you are or what you do. That first opener and getting ready, you know, that never leaves. When that leaves, you're done fishing. I'll tell you that right now. When you see that fish come over to rollers, there's nothing like it. I mean, there's often times I wondered how this could be legal. But it is, and I enjoy it, and my family enjoys being part of the fishery, and it's a good thing.
Are your nets all ready?
We're ready to go. We just got to run home and throw some anchors in. We just got into town. We was going to get some plywood and fix up a cabin for John Broderick, but that'll wait. It'll be there. Cabin's not going anywhere, but them fish are, so we got to get ready to go fish.
Perfect. Good luck today.
Thank you
so much.
Yeah.
Let's look at the east side now. Fishermen have been scratching away at the early part of this year's run. not catching much, but maybe getting a good shakedown during the free week. Igigik and Ugashik District's Area Manager Paul Solomone says the run is picking up and fishermen should be ready for the next announcement. Hey, Paul, how's it going today?
Pretty good, Molly. How about you?
Good, thanks. So we're just wondering kind of what you're seeing over on the east side.
Igigik really hasn't changed much in terms of volume we've been seeing all week. It's been very consistently probably between 40 and 70,000 fish a tide or a day in the district. We're escaping some, we're catching some. The escapement's well ahead of where we usually are this time of the year, but in a normal year, we'd only have 2 or 3 days to compare it to, considering that the towers are in early, once again, thanks to the RSDA. We're a little bit ahead of where we would usually be. So I like where we're at in terms of escapement, so that'll give us some room to keep fishing.
Okay, and then what does fishing look like for this week?
I can commit to I just announced a set net only fishing period for tomorrow. Beyond that, I'm not going to make any commitments. The Port Moeller data suggests something's on the way somewhere here. It's just a question of where it lands. The stations 4 through 8 have been, or 4 through 10 have been actually picking up a little bit, with obviously 8 and 10 being more active than inside. So there's something being indexed by that fishery. It's going to land somewhere in the bay here, we think, in the next couple of days.
Okay, so should people just kind of keep paying attention to see when you make more announcements?
Yes, stand by at the usual times. It's dynamic enough right now, so we could get information even between now and when the fishery starts this afternoon. That would take us in different directions. So it's that time of year people need to be paying attention.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by Naknek Family Fisheries, 246-FISH, or on the web at naknekfish.com.
Last Friday on KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond program, Dave Benninger spoke with University of Washington Professor Daniel Schindler, one of the leading faculty members of the Fisheries Research Institute. FRI has been carefully studying and collecting data on the Bristol Bay watershed since the late 1940s, and continues to do so each and every summer. The first part of the conversation offered an overview of the program and what projects the faculty and grad students will be up to this year. Here's more from that conversation now on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
Do you have conversations with fishermen? And obviously, I'm sure you talk with the managers and Port Moeller guys and stuff, but
yeah.
Do you find yourself in conversation with fishermen from time to time?
Yeah, pretty routinely. Some of my good friends are fishermen.
A lot of opinions out there. Everybody can seem to come up with their reason why a run is bigger or smaller, or the fish didn't show up on the beach, or they came in late or early or whatever. Mm. Is it that simple?
Well, the simple thing is to come up with good ideas about what may cause ups and downs in the fish returns. At the end of the day, you know, we let the data tell us which of those explanations is right or wrong. And whether it's from fishermen or fellow scientists or ourselves, it turns out a lot of our ideas or hypotheses just simply aren't supported by the data. So I think the reality is we're trying to understand an incredibly complex system here that produces all these salmon. Salmon have figured out how to negotiate through it, but as scientists, it's a continual challenge to really understand why a run's big in one year and poor in another. And lots of people out there, whether they're scientists or fishermen, and they have opinions based on their own experience, and some of them are good ideas, and some of them are pure wild speculation.
Can you characterize about what percentage you think we have knowledge of this system, and how much you think in the future people will continue to try to unravel about this?
Well, there's a few things we certainly know with full certainty. We know where the fish spawn. We know the sort of the course level details of their life cycles, so that they spawn in gravels that are well oxygenated with cool water. We know that most of the juveniles spend at least a year in the lakes or the big rivers. it's really when we get down into the details where we just don't understand what some of the specific mechanisms are. Huh. And as a scientist, it'll continue to challenge us into the future. The reality is these watersheds, in a lot of ways, don't need a lot of detailed understanding to manage them properly. The way they're managed is based on these escapement goals, and that has proven to be a very effective way to manage these resources.
Well, that's an interesting thing, and let me follow up real quick on that topic. I was under the impression that there may not be like a biological problem with this idea of over-escapement. In fact, that sounds like a bad term, and some of the managers say, no, don't call it over-escapement. That's economics, not biology. Is that the case? Is there any problem if we didn't fish for this year and next year and 3 years down the road, if there was no harvest, would this system suffer?
It is a explanation that certainly has grabbed the attention of a lot of people. And from an economic standpoint, it does make sense that if you put more fish than the escapement goal into the watersheds, you're missing out on some catch. From a purely biological standpoint, though, there's almost no evidence in the data that escaping more than the escapement goal actually causes the run to decline in productivity. So from the biological standpoint, the evidence for over-escapement is really weak, if at all, there.
On the kind of the tail end of that, this idea that maybe we'll do something different with the fish waste in the future, perhaps fish meal or some other technique other than grinding it up and putting it back into the bay. Do you see a potential problem with that now that the waters have been kind of groomed to accept that over the last 100 years?
I think the reality is all of our activities have effects on the ecosystem that we're working within, whether it's harvesting fish or whether it's discarding waste. So if those carcasses are saved and used somewhere else, yeah, chances are the local system will respond, because surely there are communities of fish and crustaceans that are eating the material that's released as waste. So yeah, the system will change. The question is really, is it going to cause a change that is really going to harm the system? And I don't see why that would be the case.
Okay. What's sort of the highlight for you of a summer with FRI?
You know, for me, the biggest satisfaction comes from seeing the entire season play out, from when the ice leaves the system to seeing those smolts start to leave to eventually seeing the adult salmon come back to spawn. And then by middle to end of September, it's pretty well done. And, you know, the juvenile salmon from the year previous are swimming happily around in the lakes. But for me, it's seeing that whole seasonal progression of action.
Tell me about those creeks last year real quick while I've got you on the phone. I heard Hansen's Creek.
Yeah.
That must have been incredible, huh? More fish than usual and less water than whatever?
Well, some of those streams like Hansen, you know, its water level doesn't change too much. Other streams are very sensitive to how much rain there is. But, yeah, the number of fish on Aleknagik was really, you wouldn't believe it unless you saw it. It's just the numbers just don't make much sense until you are trying to walk up the stream and you have to find a place to step that doesn't have a fish in it. Why was there such a banner return to those streams on Aleknagik? We don't really know. I mean, the rest of the system in the upper part of the watershed had pretty normal returns. Possible that they swam up on a day that the fishery wasn't operating, but that clearly is not the only explanation.
Let's see, final thoughts on the size of this year's run. Do you want to place a bet on how close it'll come to what's the FRI forecast compared to Fish and Game?
FRI's is just a little under 50 million. I think we're about 5 million lower than Fish and Game's.
Well, last year everybody was under.
Yeah.
I would say people are actually kind of hoping that's not the case this year because it's just going to be too much to handle. But who knows? What do you think?
You know, I think the forecast is good. Typically, when we have a high forecast, it's often that it's that one or two, maybe three of the rivers are predicted to come in really high, and that's what's driving the high forecast. This year, all of the systems are predicted to do really well, and you add up all those returns, and it turns out to be a really big forecast. So I see no reason at this stage to not believe the the 50 million forecast that people have out there, including us.
Daniel Schindler, it's been great speaking with you, and I'm sure this won't be the last time this year that we get to talk with you or some of your colleagues, but thanks so much for the time.
Good. Thanks for your interest, and good luck to all the fishermen out there.
I'm Molly Dishner, and this is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Finally today, every year, dozens of boats leave the bay, either for convenience or to get some winter work done, and then come back. Some on tenders or cargo ships, and some steam themselves around False Pass. But about 60 or so boats, mostly from Homer and Kodiak, take a different route. They cross Cook Inlet, take the road up to Illiamna Lake, and then come down the Quijack River. We had a set netter on this month talking about her experience on that trip. Well, I had the chance to tag along myself with a captain and crew who had taken their 32-foot drift boat back to Homer for the winter for some maintenance. We had nice weather, good company, and incredible scenery. Here's more from that 5-day voyage from Homer back to Bristol Bay. After a round of hugs to family staying behind, the fishing vessel Eagle Claw left the Homer Spit at 10 a.m. sharp Saturday morning.
Oh, we're in Kamishak Bay heading into Illiamna Bay towards Williamsport. Right, going past Augustine Island.
Skipper Louis Flora has fished Bristol Bay since the early 80s. His dad built the boat in the late 70s. Most years, the Eagle Claw winters in King Salmon.
I just wanted to have the boat back here so I could work on it over the winter in Homer, because I live in Homer, and so it was maybe a lot more convenient than flying out to the bay to do work.
Louis tells me this is his third time making this trip, which is easier than going around False Pass. It'll take us about 10 hours to cross Cook Inlet, which provides a scenic trip.
This is probably the most beautiful spot, I think, along the trip.
By early evening, we've dropped anchor and joined a line of boats waiting between Inniskin Bay and Illiamna Bay. Louis's not in a hurry. There aren't any reports of big catches yet, just boat work waiting to be done. A day will pass till the Eagle Claw is hauled out at Williamsport.
Yeah, another day of waiting and roasting.
That's Jonathan, Louis's brother. The boat is one of half a dozen in line here at the base of the Chigmit Mountains. Eventually, we're hauled out. I climb in the cab with Ray Williams, who's driving truck.
How long have you been driving this?
Oh, that's a good question. Right off the bat, I can't answer. I think since 72.
This business is in his blood. His dad started hauling goods along this route 20 years ago, mostly groceries and mail twice a year from Cook Inlet to Illiamna Lake. As Ray tells me, it eventually evolved into hauling boats.
Yeah, back in 38, the Cordova fishermen, they used to come in with a boat, walk over the road system, get into another boat that they'd left over there the year before, and then they'd row and sail down to Bristol Bay.
Oh!
Finally, somebody decided, well, gee whiz, why don't you just haul us across? So my dad, he started moving a few of them.
But Bristol Bay boats got bigger, and the business of hauling them over this road slowed.
We went from 50, 60 boats a year down to 4 or 5. And finally, in 2003, in the fall, they built a new Illiamna River Bridge that didn't have a superstructure. And then in 04, some guys decided that maybe it'd be better if I could start hauling bigger boats. So I had to start designing bigger trailers. Now it's been really jumping in numbers.
He says he did 120 hauls last year, a record, and is on track to do the same this year. That's 60 boats each way. It's an hour and a half up the 15-mile road. Ray is making his fourth trip of the day. We arrive in Pyle Bay, where the family offers hot showers, clean towels, and internet.
Got here last night about 9 o'clock, so we're waiting for some other boats to travel to Naknek, so we're kind of just killing time.
They're the last slow moments before the fishing season begins, James O'Connor tells me. He's a crewman on another boat traveling with us.
Well, it's kind of tough to know that you're going to start working soon. Just kind of anxious, I guess, a little bit. It's kind of a weird medium between hanging out, but getting ready also, so.
Tuesday morning, the Eagle Claw rafted up with two other drifters for the 10-hour trip across Iliamna. We drop anchor late that evening, just above the Quijack River.
We are in Igiagic, just sitting in the lake.
That's Louie's 10-year-old daughter, Sydney. She's on her way to her first summer of fishing in Bristol Bay. The next morning, Louie will point his vessel down the Quijack for the only white knuckle part of the trip. A setnetter I met in Pyle Bay named Bryce tells me about the Quijack's braids, which are infamously shallow.
And sometimes you have to get out and push. We do.
Did that happen last year?
Yeah. Just one spot, though.
But we, like most boats, won't brave the braids alone.
Right in tight on that bank straight ahead of you.
Our guide, George Riddles, who runs a nearby sport fish lodge, jumps aboard before we reach the Quijack's braids. He takes over navigation.
Around this corner to the right, we're going to give the corner a little bit of respect and then come in pretty tight on the bank.
George and Louie notice not all fellow travelers are having as smooth a ride down as the Eagle Claw.
What's that? Oh, black smoke. Oh, that put some power on. Yeah, he swung too low to the right. Then the other problem is these guys get down there and they think power is their friend. And they'll just chew it all up.
It's an hour or so through the braids, which guide George Riddles says change a bit every year.
And it right at the bottom, it's so filled in I couldn't get my skiff up it. And it really filled in.
Then it's another 8 hours down the river, and at some point we leave the clear water behind. Late Wednesday, the Quijack Tenderline comes into view. A cheer goes up from all on board, but my recorder's off. You can imagine the sound. The fishing vessel Eagle Claw is back in Bristol Bay. Skipper Louie Flora chats up other skippers on the radio. He's glad to be back, but he's not ready to fish yet. We go looking for a tender to fill our water and watch a dozen other drifters head to Igigik to wait for an opener. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, and I'm Molly Dishner.
But stories fly to us across the ocean of rivers where the fish are thick as sand. I will leave the house I was born in to seek my fortune in a foreign land. We are sailing, sailing, we are sailing to Alaska. We are sailing, sailing, we are sailing to Bristol.
That's it for today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, where we're now offering weekend coverage because there's nothing better to do in the summer in Bristol Bay than sit in the office. Catch the replays at 6:30, 10, and 2, or find us online. I appreciate the feedback you're sending. Keep it coming, fish@kdlg.org, or call us at the station. We take song requests, too. This is Molly Dishner in Dillingham. With help from Dave Benninger and the rest of our team, go fish. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report was made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, representing fishermen since 1966. More information at AIFMA.org.